Hello, everybody. Welcome to our last 2010 broadcast of Beyond Awakening, the Future of Spiritual Practice, which you can find on the web at beyondawakeningseries.com. I'm Terry Patton, the creator and host of this series. Over the last little over 3 months, I've had the privilege to conduct 28 far-reaching conversations with some of the most important leading-edge spiritual teachers and thought leaders of our time. And we've conducted a public exploration of this key question: how can our spirituality play a role in helping us rise to the unique challenge of a time of crisis so that we can be responsible participants in a unique cultural transition, a transition to a sustainable human presence on our planet? I posed this question because I felt and I feel like it, in a way, is the question of our time. In some ways, it's the elephant in the living room. After decades in which more and more educated, really wonderful people with nuanced, deep, sincere care and synthetic intelligence have taken up meditation and spiritual practice, exchanged their learnings with one another, deepened, combined that with what they've learned from psychotherapy, from philosophy, many of them really engaging in helping others in a whole wide variety of ways in industry and public sector, through nonprofits and volunteering. Everybody succeeding in some ways and not feeling entirely as effective as they want to be in others. We're able to look at this at this moment and ask some fundamental questions. And that's what I've tried to do in this series. I've often quoted that book title from about 15 or 20 years ago from James Hillman: we've had 100 years of psychotherapy and the world is getting worse. Well, in some ways, it seems as though our years of spiritual practice have a destiny or need to aspire to have an impact on human affairs beyond anything we've had yet. So I had the opportunity to place this question before some of the people in the world who I admire most, people I admire for the enormity of their hearts, for their spiritual transmission and radiance, for their clarity and simplicity and just naked presence, people who have the most synthetic intelligence and penetrating pattern recognition and bold and and sometimes humble philosophers, spiritual teachers, saints, sages, pandits. It's been really an incredible privilege for me to be able to take this question on from so many different perspectives. And as I've done this, I've had these conversations, you guys have participated with me, and I just want to take a moment to say thank you. Thank you to you who are listening, to all of you who have posted questions and thoughtful comments on our blog. Some of the dialogues that have taken place on that blog have just been remarkable. And the level of depth, the nuanced capacity to hold paradox and to care about various different aspects of this conversation simultaneously has just moved me so much. I took a moment and printed out some of the comments that people had made. It's funny. So many of them are written in a very distinctive, unique voice. You know, some of them penetrating inside. A lot of them just heart ragged passion. Sometimes just a humble and simple, resonant depth. A lot of intelligence. It's obviously a really diverse community. Many of you have spent decades involved in serious spiritual practice and are serving as teachers and guides to others. Others of you have come to the path more recently, but you're all really smart and really caring. So please accept a deep bow. I really pray to continue to be able to serve you well. We're at a unique moment. I'm kind of taking this time to offer some comments and perspectives, kind of a wrap-up for the year, because the original teleseries that I launched really was intended to come to an end tonight. But in the last few weeks, we've taken stock and decided, you know, to extend this as a regular internet radio program into 2011. Still, though, tonight is an opportunity to make some summary comments, and so that's what I'm doing. I want to thank you guys especially for so many wonderful comment postings of appreciation and thanks, love and joy and gratitude. There were just so many wonderful exchanges after viewing the wonderful video from Brother David that I posted at Thanksgiving. You folks really gave me a real bolt of extra emotional energy, and I deeply appreciate that. And there have been a lot of challenging, intelligent comments. Many of you have not held back in criticizing this or that about me or the series or certain points of view that some of our guests or I have surfaced. And you know, that's good. That's part of what we're here to do. Some of them have been very funny jokes and some very sweet exchanges. This has been an incredibly busy several months in my life, and so I wasn't able to participate very much directly in the comment threads. But, you know, because when I do that, when I get into it at that level, I combine myself pretty deeply, and I've just had my hands so full it wasn't possible. But I felt enormously supported by the way that people really cared and showed up. I saw that I was talking to a diverse group of really 3D human beings, and there are a few I wanted to just comment on. Way back at the beginning, Charles wrote, "The speakers you've lined up are perhaps the greatest heavyweights today to bring about the much-needed ripples that will, if not enlighten, certainly tenderize our minds. I firmly believe that most of the questions you initially listed are seriously gestating around the globe right now, awaiting the moment of grace to spring into full bloom, of which we have absolutely no control, only wide-eyed wonder." I certainly resonated with that. It's been interesting to look back on some of these comments from the beginning of the series. What unfolded was that I began kind of with a bang, with three interviews with, I offered an introduction where Craig Hamilton kind of interviewed me, and I laid out an evolutionary and integral perspective. And then Ken Wilber really gave us a full catechism in integral theory, and Michael Murphy expanded that in his description of evolutionary panentheism, and then Andrew Cohen stepped in with his passion for the evolutionary impulse. And that kind of created a context in which this integral view, in which, as Steve McIntosh put it, we really understand that consciousness evolves and that we are that evolution right now, was really set forth. And we were also looking at this moment in evolution, in which evolution has seen itself just recently through our eyes, at a time in which the full 13.7 billion year trajectory of cosmic evolution and biological evolution and cultural evolution and consciousness evolution are all now so speeded up that they're happening even in our lifetime. And we are that evolutionary process, alive and expressed in the form of a human being in a way that's truly unprecedented. And to take that seriously, as an opportunity and as a responsibility, we really stepped into the wonder of that and felt that. And yet, having done that, it was very interesting, because one of the things that took place here is there was a deep dialectic in which when a point of view was presenced, another point of view that was equally profound and seemingly contradictory also ended up getting presenced. So as strongly as we presenced that integral and evolutionary perspective, it didn't take long before another perspective, the classical perspective of enlightenment, probably personified especially deeply by Sadhguru Jaggi Vasudev, by Ram Dass, by Gangaji, by Adyashanti, was presence just beautifully, with a kind of transmission and depth and resonance, which basically said just this. The love that is being all things. This moment, the divinity, the remarkable, rich, transmissive, transcendent, radiant consciousness that is being all things, the love that is always already here. We merely need only rest as what is. And these great realizers could transmit that. That was the thing that came through some of those interviews, was the tremendous power with which that was transmitted. I felt that also very strongly with many of our guests, but those folks particularly epitomized that. And I found it very, it was like a wonderful kind of acrobatic thing that was required of me, because I felt like, having resonated so powerfully with one perspective, it was almost as if I was being a bit of a chameleon when I turned around and resonated equally with a perspective that seemingly contradicted it. But that was the honest reality of my experience, that in fact, there are multiple radically true bottom lines simultaneously. The paradox of the enlightened perspective that emerges for me after decades of spiritual practice, decades of reading and spending time with great beings, and this last several months of being involved in this remarkable series of public conversations. A radical truth does not make another radical truth untrue, even if it seemingly expresses a different perspective. And this penetration of the mind, this penetration of experience by the luminous, empty presence of God, of the transcendental consciousness, of the always already fullness and grace, the awesome reality that is being all beings now and now and now, always, as my teacher used to call it, the glorious starry God. We live in this God. We are this divine reality. The feeling that, just however potently, and in a sense being relieved of any other concern by the utter, graceful, transcendental reality of divine being, that doesn't make the profound perspective of evolution and the importance that that discovery represents untrue or a deviation from depth. That evolutionary story gives us a context, a way of framing and understanding this moment that has the incredible heft of 13.7 billion year trajectory of a bringing together of all our knowledge of physics and chemistry and astronomy and biology and archaeology, history and culture. All of it is summarized in this story of evolution. The awesome sweep of that, and the way that single comprehensive integrating paradigm creates a context for understanding everything, including this very moment. It's the relative, certainly. But this profound spiritual view that I see emerging from this conversation is radically non-dual. That is, it embraces the relative even as it transcends it. And so the importance of the relative is undiminished. So here we have the contradictory truth of what is happening in time mattering terribly, so much. So much depends on what we do, at the same time that what we really are transcends time, and none of it matters in that sense. In some sense, we're already washed and graced and forgiven and absolved and raised up, and our prayers are answered, and as my teacher used to put it, everything has already died. This is the other world. Somehow we can stand in the paradox of really caring and really digging in and really being able to express a commitment, even as we can stand in that other wider perspective. And I felt that brought forth even in play with another point of view, this point of view that was probably epitomized by Robert Augustus Masters. I think we saw it in Samuel and Linda Bonder, a little bit with Dan Millman, also Diane Hamilton, which said, the human side, don't forget the humanness, don't forget our shadow. Let's not bypass the human with our spirituality. Getting rooted in the very difficult matter of living up against the limits of human experience, this is where the rubber meets the road. Your grand ideas of divine reality or an evolutionary and integral synthesis don't exempt you from showing up right here in relationships with the difficulties of your own humanity, and everybody's humanity, unique as though it is and beautiful though it is also about limits. It's about the ways in which we've been wounded. And I had a chance to engage in a few particularly deep conversations in the last little while with people in which the universality of shame over our humanity really arose and struck me. I found myself feeling how important it was, how I wanted to make sure to mention to you that this courage to be vulnerable, to know that being born as an imperfect being who's in many ways wired for struggle is okay. And that having a kind of self-compassionate, self-embracing ability to notice our shame and instead of running from it, instead of acting it out, to in some sense embrace ourselves in the fact that no matter what our divine intuitions, no matter what our synthetic understandings, no matter how grateful, no matter how connected with grace we are, there are those moments in which we feel stupid or foolish or awkward, and in which some part of us would seal off from the rest of us and we become split inside. And that bringing ourselves to that with a wholeheartedness, with an authenticity, without needing to pretend that we are anything other than what we are, this too is a bottom line. And each of these seems to assert that it is the bottom line, that it conditions the other bottom lines, that it makes them less important. But no, it doesn't. Each of them is equally important. Each of them is not even equally important, because in the truth in which they stand, they are the truth. And nothing makes them less than the truth. The radical truth of enlightenment, the radical truth of an integral evolutionary synthesis that's only now becoming possible, the radical truth of our humanness. And there was another theme that emerged. I mean, there's many themes, but another very principal theme that emerged was the idea. We saw this with Rick Hansen, we saw it with Howard Martin and Debbie Rosman from the Institute of Heart Math, Hale Dwoskin from the Sedona Method, Dan Millman also. I think some of this expressed itself from many of our speakers. The idea that simple, elegant, skillful means, simple things like gratefulness, taking in the good, remembering our times of happiness and sufficiency, of what we appreciate, and breathing that to and from the heart with feeling, asking ourselves if we can welcome what it is that's arising, and once we can, asking if we can let it go, if we could let it go. If we would let it go, when might we let it go? These represent wonderful, simple expressions of a wisdom that's on the other side of sophistication. It's the simplicity on the other side of complexity. And they're very important. So there's another kind of point of view that asks for simple, radically pragmatic tools, skillful means that we can use to cut through in the midst of our busy lives. So it's a very important theme that arose in the midst of these conversations. Some people would say, that's the point, something I can use right now. That's another truth that has its own way of being the bottom line. But none of these truths conditions the others at all. And in fact, you know, I came to this having worked closely with Ken Wilber and with others at Integral Institute. You got a chance to meet many of my dear Dharma friends who have held this journey, pieces of this journey with me, who have accompanied me and have been my colleagues. And the core of this integral perspective is sometimes summarized as being both and consciousness, where one reality doesn't have to be chosen in an either-or fashion over another, but both can be really held. Now, one of the things that I noticed as we did go through this process of conversation was that I so loved my conversation, for example, with Ram Dass. It was such a privilege to just hang in such a deep place as he had to really struggle sometimes for words, even though he was resting in a very, very deep place in his own consciousness. And all he wanted to express was the love that's always already here, that not a love that we do, but a love that we can simply consent to be because it is already us. And that transmission, that field, that profound, deep, free, loving, infinite field of consciousness and being and love and bliss it's the truth. You see, for us to paradoxically hold that and some other truth, we have to kind of get out of the state. You can't be in that state and be in another state that notices all the complexities of the evolutionary process and the evolution of culture and intellectual history. You can't do those two things simultaneously. They're like state-specific cognitions. And I found myself noticing that it's very, very hard to express this, but I really hoped I could evoke for you all. This is a fireside chat I'm trying to hold. It's kind of funny. I've pulled myself up next to my fireplace, and so I'm hanging out with you and intending to have an intimate kind of personal conversation. And this is the one of the core things I hope to get across during this time we're spending, which is, at a superficial level, the integral disposition seems to be a very smart mental feat of attention in which you can somehow validate radical consciousness and evolution and psychology and psychotherapy and shadow work and all these different things as if they were mental objects that we were juggling in our consciousness from an objective and dispassionate place. But if there's anything that was driven home by this series of dialogues and in my experience, it was that you can't stand in an immune place and know things. You kind of have to be combined with each of these truths. And to be combined with different truths that require you to be in a different state, to feel them completely, to be truly combined with them, to let their wisdom find its way through your DNA and capillaries and pores and just come through you, for you to really be alive as the intelligence of a view. You have to surrender. and in some sense surrender completely to that point of view. And these point of views are not points of view are not. There's nothing wrong with them. It is inherent in human speech, in human communication, in human communion, that together we resonate in a way of feeling, in a way of seeing. A way of seeing that may be seeing that may be transcendental, may be blissful, may be so grateful, so humble, so free, so present, so alive, that it seems capital T true. But if it excludes another way of experiencing things, in a sense, there's room for something more. I think this is what the truth, you know, the truth of what is meant by this idea that every perspective is both true and partial. It's not partial in the sense that there's something wrong with it. It's partial just in the sense that however true it is, let's leave ourselves room also to be in another truth. Something in the human character wants to snap shut once we've seen capital T truth of any kind. Once we've really let a spiritually awake vision land in our hearts and in our whole beings, we want to just say, that's the truth. That's my truth. I hang with that. But as soon as we do that, we turn something mysterious and open-ended and vast and infinite and amazing into something that can be known, into an object, into a neat package. And it loses its potency, its ability to break through the dream, to look us right in the eye, to grab us by the heart, to take us somewhere new. And you know very well that every really true perspective has that fiery aliveness. The evolutionary and integral perspective has that fiery aliveness. From my point of view, its greatness comes from its being held with a kind of humility such that it can bow completely to the radical enlightenment perspective, to the completely personal human perspective, in which the unique, wounded, sometimes ashamed nature of an individual body-mind is not made wrong or tried to be transcendent, but is embraced and held and loved. We have to do that first with ourselves. So for me, this tour has taken me through a process of resonating really deeply with these wonderful human beings. Some of them dear friends, some of them people that I've just gotten to know recently, some I met for the first time. But in simply opening and resonating with Thomas Hubel, Diane Hamilton, Sadhguru Jaggi Vasudev, Steve McIntosh, Lama Surya Das, Jean Houston, Ram Das, Adyashanti, name after name. So many amazing great souls on this list. What's happened for me is that I've arrived even more fiercely in the core clarity that I was given through my years of spiritual practice. You know, I lived and worked particularly intensively for a 15-year period with my root guru, Adi Da Samraj, who was a very, very fiercely demanding guru. He required us to wake up early and practice pretty much all day long. To the degree that we were conscious enough, there were practices for us to do in our dreams. We'd serve, we'd meditate, we'd teach, we'd work, eat the right diet, exercise, various ways. It was a totally consuming, integral practice. And what I ended up discovering was that in the fulfillment of spiritual awakening, each fulfillment, in some sense, we arrive at a holy jumping off place, at something in which the non-dual interconnectedness of all things kind of pops you through a trap door. And as much as you've embraced one thing, its apparent opposite is true. There are points of view that were not surfaced in this series, but that we're all working with. Points of view that is absolutely real as God is, and as primary as divine love and gratitude and blessing and grace may be, the hard brass facts of life, brass tacks and hard facts of life, the material limitations are in some ways the reality we have to reckon with. Both are true. Just as much as spirituality is primary and necessary and important, in some way it can be used as an escape. And ignoring the spiritual dimension, making it less the focus, as Dan Millman and Robert Augustus Masters emphasize, is in certain moments the most important thing for us to pay attention to. There's a whole critique that the whole spiritual undertaking becomes a game, an enlightenment business. That point of view wasn't surfaced very directly, but we've reckoned with that too. It's all got a kind of truth. Whatever truth you're holding, can you be big enough to hold it in a way that lets another apparently contradictory truth cut through it? Can you live in the incredible tenderness of an open heart that extends into the unknowable so far that it's sort of quivering with the vulnerable, tender aliveness of that which edges upon something that transcends it, that every truth is self-transcending, that every perspective is self-transcending. That's what I've arrived at from this. So I'm wanting to really let that be felt, to say that, and then maybe to back away from it a little bit and maybe create a little bit more dynamism to this monologue, because it's usually these are dialogues and there's a little bit of play between me and someone else. I'm going to kind of become some of the different voices inside me and interview myself. One of the ideas that I put forward was the idea that a meta sangha may be emerging, a big tent in which we might be able to be as intimate as people are in intimate relationships, really be transparent, and hold each other and the field in which we're talking, as Thomas Hubel put it so beautifully, where we can be really radically present and open and engage a new kind of availability, surrendering the immunity of any position as a teacher in relation to a student, in which we just touch heart to heart human beings. Could teachers do that with each other? Could students of different teachers connect with one another in that spirit? Well, I felt the potential for that during this series of conversations. I raised it with teachers. And the openness and the responsiveness from many of you in the comments leave me feeling that that's important business to return to and further in whatever ways we can. I think that we've opened a door into something that has... there's more we can do there, and more we therefore need to do there. I also wanted to ask myself, I guess I'll do this in a little more dramatic of a way. Okay, Terry, how can our spirituality create the future? You've been asking this question as if you're really sure there's an answer. Where have you come to in this? Well, I've come to a place of saying that, well, hey, our spirituality is what's creating the future. All of this is spiritual. We are spiritual beings having a human experience after all. So all of this, the messy, painful, disappointing expressions, as much as the more beautiful and high ones, are our spirituality creating the future. And we can engage our spirituality differently. You know, if there's anything that I've seen during this period of time, it has been the potency and importance of a profound and regular practice. During this whole period of time, every single morning, I've waked up in the morning and I've done a morning practice. And that morning practice has felt incredibly full and blissful and enlightened and ecstatic and expansive on some days, and it's been relatively minimal on others. But that regularity and the fact that I've been doing a regular spiritual practice for 35 years has created a foundation for me that enables me to be available and trustable in a way that I never would have been if I hadn't done it. So I'm more persuaded than ever that I want to offer that and teach that. That whole process of refining and clarifying this whole matter of an integral approach to practice, especially because we so need ways of practicing that are flexible enough, that acknowledge the fact that we're so insanely busy that every one of us everybody I know is facing a level of complexity that exceeds anything they've experienced ever before. And that this world, this life, is the one in which we must practice. So the practices that evolved 1,000 years ago are incredible gifts, but they really need to arrive in our lives. And so really paying attention to that and crafting that, that's been a real focus. I've been working a lot with it, and I hope to have something to share and let you know about before too long, so that will be coming. I think that my sense is that if we can establish a community of people who have a regular and integral practice, there is a way that we can be trustable to one another and responsible for a kind of availability to one another, such that we can begin to be the armature or maybe the critical mass out of which a new cultural turn can be made. I sense that possibility, and I feel excited in whatever ways I can to serve that. Sense that a big tent really is arising, where what it is that we have in common with one another is breaking through the preoccupation with what we don't have in common. One of the paradoxes, I thought, in the comments that we received, we see some amazing comments. Actually, let me read a couple more. I printed out a few before I began this broadcast. Michael Erdman wrote, this teleseries has me thinking about the effects of TV, internet, and Facebooking, and I'm convinced in our interruption-driven, multiple-orienting perspective postmodernism, there exists a richer capacity for growth, maturity, and transcendence. A new, better, and more adaptable, wonderful vision logic. I think many of us doubt that often, but is that possible? Can we create something new out of this moment, this new cultural media moment? Michael wrote back on September 28th, I suppose an important inquiry with any kind of personal, social, or political change is how are you perceiving and interpreting that which seems to be resisting forward movement? And then how are you choosing to specifically engage with that perceived resistance? That's a very cool question, isn't it? What is it that's resisting our evolution or our growth? And how are we choosing to engage with it? He felt that monitoring, clarifying, enlarging our scope of awareness in relation to the vibration of every thought, feeling, and action we take or don't is of vital importance as the energy of division intensifies. So this engagement, this deep engagement, is, it's something we're going to have to live, each one of us, no matter what happens with Beyond Awakening or your relationship to me or this particular conversation. It's a conversation you'll take with you and that I'll take with you throughout the rest of our lives. So let's take a moment to just drop in and open our hearts and breathe and welcome the mystery of existence into the field. The mystery of existence is being us and all things. The mystery of existence is being the question, is being the beauty, is being our fear, our confusion, our joy, our gratitude. Sometimes we look at it as if it were something we could understand and perceive. Other times we meet it as our most intimate beloved, our most intimate relation, the being who gave us birth and into whose arms we'll eventually die. You, mystery of being. You who are being me, everyone on this line. You who have been being all the wonderful people I've interviewed, all the amazing folks who've participated and listened and written their comments. You who are being all of us, being ourselves. Thank you. Thank you. Amazing being. You who are being us. And we, individually and together, sometimes feeling so connected, sometimes feeling so apart. We am you. We am this. You and I and others right now, we are being the mystery, being us. Being us as our beloved, being us as an object of our attention. All our lines of inquiry weaving apart and back together. These tender questions. And all of this in a moment in which it all becomes visible to itself. Visible as the brilliant, I don't know mystery. The luminous God being. Visible as evolution seeing itself through our eyes in a moment in which evolution must choose in a new way, in which people who are already spirit have an opportunity perhaps to choose to be human in yet a new way that we haven't fully done before. Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. And in that, maybe it becomes possible for us to pray, to say please, mystery, source of grace, you who are being all of us. Can you fill us with the clarity to stand in these paradoxical questions, to hold them for real, to hold them fiercely, to stand in the face of a moment that seems to ask something of humanity that humanity doesn't seem to know how to do? Can we stand there and fiercely say, please give us the capacity to channel or find or discover or invent answers for questions that we're holding that need better answers. How can we cooperate better? How can we crack some of these technological challenges? How can we bridge these seemingly Gordian knots? How can we cut through them? We can stand in the mystery, as the mystery, calling out, we need better answers to these questions. We are the presence of love, trusting, utterly relaxed, utterly grateful, content, completely content. And in that utter relaxed contentment, shouting out for what evolution's next expression needs to be, that somehow has to find its way into form through somebody. Well, please, let me do whatever my part is. Let you do whatever your part is. Let us do. Let us be the we am of this weaving itself into form. Let us arrive, sometimes furrowed brow, sometimes ashamed, sometimes confused, trusting still that mystery is being us through all that, not disowning, not hating any part of this human display, finding a way to bring it back together so that this sangha, these prodigal sons and daughters of this oneness, this prior unity that has splintered itself apart and is regathering itself in every moment, that we can be that conscious one, being in conflict elegantly and beautifully and with passion and grit and unselfconscious courage. You know, probably my happiest understanding in all my years of practice is the paradox that somehow I can love God even though in my deepest knowing there is no other. There is no otherness to this God. Well, as real as there is a self, as real as there is a me and a you, well, so real is the other. And yet we paradoxically are that other, that divine beloved, that Christ consciousness, that Buddha nature, that Brahman, Atman. So we can sing to that one as that one. We can, in this moment, since it's very close to the winter solstice, which is an interesting time. It's the time when it's like the light is getting smaller and smaller and it's about to start returning. In just a few days, the day will be the shortest of the year. We'll begin to get a little more light and a little more. Winter is just beginning here in the northern hemisphere. In the southern hemisphere, it's the other side of this, of course, but here in the northern hemisphere, where most of us are, We've got some friends in the southern hemisphere, but the bulk of us are here in the northern hemisphere where it's winter. We're in this moment when we have a great tradition of celebration, of singing Christmas carols, of praising and feeling joy in what it is that survives the dimming of the light, in the light that's here even when the light is minimized. And a dear friend of mine, one of my oldest friends, Ray Lynch, he's a musician who his music was there as our hold music before we began today. And he has written a Christmas carol which expresses this paradox. And I want to share it and we can perhaps sing it together to the degree you feel moved. Even if you're sitting alone, I encourage you to join in. It's a unique kind of a approach to a Christmas carol. It's sort of like we sing to the mystery of existence as if we are the mystery of existence singing to us as the heart of love, the heart of reality, the source of bliss, the source of grace. And the very fact of this mysterious unity is the celebration, the fact that this one is here, that I as that one, am here. I sing to the separate one, to every separate one, offering my love and grace. So please, Brad, could you go ahead and cue that up, and I'll sing along with it a little bit, and I hope some of you will play with me in doing this and enjoy a wonderful Christmas carol. It's called This Is the Great Gift. Go ahead, Brad.
Thank you.
enjoy it and relax into it as much as I was. I love that song. And I love this season of giving, a season of noticing the light that shines even at the darkest part of the cycle. In some ways, we're greeting a moment in which some of the news makes us think we're at a dark point in the cycle. But the heart can be full even then. And our hearts can rise to the challenges of a world that often seems not to make sense, where contradictory truths are sometimes yammering back and forth like bickering siblings. And I am here. I am consciousness. I am happiness. Always. Now, we are in a time in which what we do matters as much as the non-dual grace of the mystery of being is the truth, the remedy, the freedom, the solution, that which washes us of all dilemma and problem. We are here, in time, at a time when what we do matters. So, I want to invite you to join the conversation. If some of you who are listening by the web would like to type in questions, or if you'd like to raise your hand, please dial *6. Wait a second, *2, I guess it is. I have it typed wrong here. *2 on your telephone. But before we go to answering those questions, I'd like to handle some announcements I want to make. One of them is I want to thank our whole great team, including folks from both Evolving Wisdom and Integral Spiritual Practice. First and foremost, our series producer, Richard Klein, who has been at my side throughout this whole process and has given heart and soul to this in so many ways. He's here with us now. I just so deeply appreciate your help, Richard. Paul Taylor, thank you for introducing me on almost all these broadcasts. Today I wanted to make it a little bit more of a intimate fireside chat, but you've been with me all through this. Thank you. And Brad, you're here right now, and you've been at my side throughout this whole thing as our audio engineer. Thank you. I want to thank the core team who's been supporting me. Amir, Ahmad, Marco Morelli, Bill McCart, Paul Block, and my dear wife, Deborah Boyer. And then our larger team, including Lauren Tenney, Dee Black, Cecile Green, Milagros Paredes, Laura Trumbull, Diego Delgado, Todd Goldfarb, and Jeff Belzy. And especially Craig Hamilton and Claire Zammit, the amazing friends and evolutionary leaders with whom I conceived this series and without whom I could never have executed it with anywhere near the quality that we have. I especially also want to thank all you guys who are on the line. I'm just thinking, I'm looking at my comments. There's one that was typed in during November by Theo, which I loved. He said, it's precisely out of this tension between irreconcilable truths that the miraculous process of evolution creates new transcendent solutions. Isn't that beautiful? Wonderful comment. There's some real gems in our comment section. He went on to say, "I'm alive and life is good. Life is eternal optimism, just because that's the only stance that can keep it going. The optimism of a million sperm heading for the egg, regardless of the eventual outcome. And as an embodiment of star stuff, the co-creator of the universe, I can only give it my best shot." Well, thank you. I feel like there are many of us on the line right now who are feeling something like this. But with all this and a community of almost 35,000 people, I never was expecting the overwhelming size of the response to these dialogues and the comments. We've all got over 4,000 fans on Facebook following this conversation and contributing to it. You know, I'm just so humbled and grateful. So we're going to continue a couple times a month. We'll probably be doing them mostly on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. Pacific time. I also want to respond. There are a lot of folks who've sent me questions saying, gee, you know, I'm getting to a level of this discussion that feels so vital. I want to continue it. And I do have something really, you know, I'm really trying to put together my best response, and I have something really special that I've been working on. I'll be telling you more about it as soon as it's ready, so please stay tuned for that. And please stay on the line. After I take a few questions, I'll tell you a little more about what's going to be coming after we take our break for the holidays. On January 9th, I'll be talking with author Raphael Kushner, who's really an important and brilliant voice. So taking a look here, what do we have on the Q&A? Let's see. Do we have any questions? Yes, quite a few. All right. From Petropolis, Brazil, Antonio Augusto Cesaricos asks, I just want to send you back the love, if only to acknowledge, to recognize the love and care you put into this webcasting. Oh, that's, thank you. I wish I could be with you in the Integral community again at Integral Spiritual Experience, but in a way, I truly am, for when I listen to this series, I know I'm living in an amazing time. Thank you. Oh, wonderful, Antonio. I hope I get to see you. It looks like I'm coming to Brazil in August next year, August or September. Catherine from La Quinta asks me to send or post the words to the holiday carol. She says, I just want to be able to participate. And would you make the recording available? You know, I should have already announced this. It was my intention to. You can get this. It's available on iTunes. It's by Ray Lynch, and it's called This Is the Great Gift. You could also buy it at Amazon.com, MP3 downloads. Ray Lynch, This Is the Great Gift. And I would be happy to post the words, Catherine. I will try to remember to do that, and you are invited to email me if I'm slow to do that. Deborah from Omaha asks, is there a way to be, something to do, a practice that stands out above all else to not only assist ourselves but also the people and planet we love? If so, what is it? Please make it as pragmatic as possible. Well, Deborah, the simplicity on the other side of complexity needs a little bit of framing. I wish I could give you the fullest gift just in a few words. I'm hoping to offer some really detailed guidance so that you could really have a simple core practice that can authentically last your whole life, because that's what this needs to be. But I'd say the core of it is that in your own heart, you have loved, you have recognized the miracle and loving nature of existence, and not losing track of the fact that that is the truth, that you don't practice in order to counter a negative reality. You practice to emerge from a negative delusion into the actuality of an utterly graceful, glorious, happy, joyous reality. To know that the good news is the truth, that's the core of it all. Ram Dass's beautiful, beautiful spirit, you know, making its way, even when words didn't come easily, to just say, the being is love. How profoundly happy, content he feels in that. I think that's the core. Now, doing that with the breath, with feeling, from the heart, doing it in a moment in which the heart is closed, in which resentment or fear needs to turn the corner into just a kind of neutral ease, or if possible, maybe a little bit of appreciation. And rediscovering the beginner's mind and open field of not knowing so much, and being able to smile at the heart, to notice the gift, to be grateful. Those are all expressions of it. I hope to offer more along those lines. Deborah, thanks for the question. I hope that's helpful. Ann Gilmore from Brookline asks, what spiritual teachers have had the most influence on you and why? Well, by far, the teacher who's had the most influence on me is my root guru, Adi Da, because I spent 15 years living intensively with him. His biggest reason for influencing me, oddly enough, he's known for being a brilliant philosopher. Ken Wilber has even called him his favorite spiritual writer of all time. He's written, really, I think, over 100 books. He's tremendously prolific and brilliant. But the thing about him, and he's also created a lot of art. I mean, he's kind of a prolific creator. But the thing about him that was the most influential on me was the spiritual fragrance that surrounded him, just the sweetness. It'd be like coming into his company. It was a fragrance that filled the room, a light and love and sweetness and tenderness, and fragrance of divine grace. And knowing that that fragrance that I felt so strongly in his company was not the exception to a dreary, drab world, but sort of the essential truth of that world, letting that really register and change my view. I think that's the greatest gift I've been given in this life. But then, you see, it was very important for that to be confirmed in conversations like some of those that you've listened to that I've had with some of these amazing folks on this series. LD in Prescott, Arizona, offers blessings to me and says, I truly believe there's a need for prayer speech online, not just dialogues. There are mythic fundamentalist preachers on TV and radio. Why not integral preachers, meaning passionate voices praying aloud, so to speak, communing and uniting with and sharing their being spirit? I feel this is a next step for integral spirituality. With your words and song, you've approached it more and more. Well, thank you. I think I want to open up the lines. Let me see if we've got some raised hands. Pardon me, I'm a little slower today because I don't have that time. See, it looks like we've got not so many hands raised yet, but quite a few questions. Patricia Faye Marshall from McMinnville, Oregon, writes, Terry, is it okay for us to fall out, embrace our source? It seems like we approach the idea of original cause and source with such trepidation. At some point, it seems like it became politically correct to somehow be beyond God. Well, you know, my meaning for the phrase beyond awakening was certainly not to be beyond divine communion. No, no, no. Beyond awakening means now that we are here in love, as being, as the joy that is the center of our lives, the reason for every breath, the source of every heartbeat. Now that we can touch that, to the degree that we have awakened enough that we can stand in joyous embrace of the one who is breathing us and beating our hearts and thinking our thoughts, and the spark of life, the beginning of every gesture within ourselves, beyond that, how do we live that? How do we live that in a way that's never been lived before? That's the beyond awakening. No, no, no. Yes, we have to simply be given permission to enjoy and appreciate and celebrate the awakening itself. It's the awakening lived, not beyond awakening in the sense that there's anything missing in awakening, but our spirituality has not transformed our world yet, and we're in a moment in which a major shift needs to happen. And how can our spirituality power and inform that, and how can it and render us better able to be lovers of God and leaders and contributors in play? And how can we infect the process of our relationships with one another with this joy and love, such that the spirit of being is making itself manifest through us at a time when the affairs of human beings have evolutionary significance? Well, we have a question from someone I know. This must be Sam. Hi, Sam.
Well, hi. How are you doing, Terry?
I'm good.
It sounds like everybody's great, you know, and I just really wanted to say hi. And also, I really have had a lot of time, fun experimenting with adding these different people's practices and really stretching integral. And I don't think I've really worked with it as deeply as I am now with these different lines and types and, you know, different levels and, of course, the states, which we all appreciate, and the quadrants and things. It's really a great opportunity for me, and I wanted to thank you for providing this and also for your ongoing support with our, internet radio that you're doing. I really think that it's the start, or maybe a continuation, but it seems for me at least the start of something pretty amazing that I can't even begin to describe. And I also appreciate all you people out there, because I don't think it can happen without the support of people like you and really giving your creative input too. So it's just beautiful.
Well, thanks so much, Sam. It's nice to hear your voice, and thank you for that blessing. It feels really good.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Well, I'm really glad you're a part of it. Yeah, I think that we are in the beginning of something that can go further, and that's it's really my life commitment to take it another step further, and I'll be doing that through these broadcasts and some other things I hope to bring together soon.
Well, and definitely people will reach back and bootstrap this, I think. You know, this will be one of the things, too, where, you know, they'll be engaging with. And I don't want to go too far about that, but it's really far out.
Well, right on, man.
Possible. Well, thank you, and happy holidays to everybody.
Yeah, happy holidays to you, Sam.
Absolutely.
Wonderful.
Great end here. Great, absolute.
Okay, well, thank you. We got a question here from Wayne Messiano in Vineland, New Jersey, who writes, Terry, it seems that there's been some direct distinction in the quest of conscious evolution between being peaceful and doing the becoming. Would you comment as to the future of non-duality in action? Oh, the future is non-duality in action, that both are not mutually exclusive, that it is not possible to be easeful while becoming even... is it not possible to be easeful while becoming, even with creative tension? That is, okay, he's basically saying, yes, can we be easeful while becoming? That is, even if we're in the midst of a tremendous tension, is there another sense in which we can be surrendered and relaxed and easeful? And he says, a context may present itself that just being may be the thing to propel evolution rather than a doing, sincerely in gratitude for your awesome series. Oh, thank you, Wayne. Well, so this is really at the nub of one of the core paradoxes here, which is there is no sanity if we are primarily bringing a disturbance and an agitation. If our agitation is what we're bringing, you know, it's like nothing you do can exceed its premise, the mood, the attitude, the fundamental energy that we bring to whatever we do is what it ends up creating. So if I operate on the basis of a disturbance, I create disturbance. So the motive to become, the discontent that's alive there, how can that energy that is about doing, that is about the complexity and the moving forward and the not enoughness yet, the gap between what is now and what needs to be, how can that really be an expression of of completion, of wholeness, of the prior unity, of the fullness of God. How can it be that too? And I think what Wayne is intuiting and expressing in his question is the sense that it is both somehow, that there can be a sense of profound okayness, a profound joy, a profound happiness, profound divine communion that is also full of a kind of urgency to do good work, to address what is not yet full, that notices the gap, but doesn't make the gap its dispositional point of view, so that somehow we can bring a kind of wholeness and happiness and grace and love and joy and ease to everything we do, even though our doing obviously involves cognizing what could be fuller and what needs to shift. And in our times, you know, there are so many very, very difficult trends that are tending to be frightening. So can we be alive to all of that with a heart that's fundamentally healed and full? Yes. And that is the core of non-duality. But one of the things about non-duality is it's not an idea, you know. Non-duality is a realization. That we actually do have a transformational process. Practice does transform us. And deepening in a real, lived, bodily communion with that profound, joyous reality of divine existence, so that we're really alive in that and as that, and our activities and our behaviors and our doings are expressions of that, even though we are not pulled back from the terrible, dark, painful, tragic, disturbing imbalances of our world, that we can somehow be with it all at once. And this is a curriculum of maturation that human beings have never fully achieved. It's a big thing to become enlightened at all. Traditionally, only a few in each generation even woke up. To be asked to wake up to the freedom beyond form, in a sense, wake up beyond the wheel of birth and death, but also then to wake up as evolution, doing what it needs to do, to wake up in our humanity, able to be self-compassionate in terms of our brokenness and shame, to wake up as women becoming powerful in a way that's never been possible before, and as men who can be friends and supporters, brothers and sisters with women in that different way, to be awake as the field is self-creating something new, to do all of this at once. This is a curriculum of maturation that the world has never seen before. And we stand in a moment where we're beginning to glimpse it. And in this series, I think perhaps we've touched many of the domains that this curriculum of human maturation touches on. Well, what a beautiful vision. What an amazing privilege to be alive at a time when we can aspire so far beyond what has even been possible before and what we can realize. The fact that we can see a possibility that we don't perfectly embody is, it should be both a goad to ask us to live more deeply, but also just beautiful in itself. Like, we do not have to bridge the gap for the wonder of the kind of profundity of our human possibility, the fact that it's evolving in our lifetime to be a resource to us. I hope you can feel this. Let's see. Trudy from Lake Oswego, Oregon asks, will the forthcoming continuing series delve into how our awakening paths and practices can contribute to thinking and acting together in the face of complicated and difficult world crises? Climate change, global poverty, water scarcity, and so on, and how we can fully hold the truths of those who are fearful, angry, and who don't want to listen or change. At the same time, we must act and make profound changes in our material world, what is integral action in these times? Well, that is beautifully put, Trudy. That is what I hope to continue to delve into from a number of different angles. I think you're expressing it exactly right. I think we are, you know, because we are very diverse, different individuals are going to become effective activists in different ways. One individual may simply help others in a very personal, hands-on way, volunteering at a homeless shelter, say. You know, another person may be devising some technological product that's going to perhaps be of help to people in tangible ways, maybe helping energy be transmitted more efficiently, or enabling computers to use less electricity or something. There are so many different particular tasks that people are going to be putting themselves to. Some people are going to be helping organizations organize themselves differently and make decisions and govern themselves differently. I'm wanting to speak about this in a way that leaves room for the unique expressions of so many different people, because I know there are people listening who may have a variety of personal contributions that are really, really significant. There are as many different forms of activism as there are people, and there are many, many important jobs to be done. I think one of the things that needs to change is that we, as we awaken spiritually, need to give ourselves permission to take ourselves a bit more seriously, perhaps to recognize that we can reframe the idea of ambition such that we can begin to realize that our desire to shine is not all ego. Some of your desire to shine and to make your contribution is evolution, the impulse of evolution to do its job through you, and for us to come alive with a higher octave of energy, with more wattage, to be inspired at a different level is part of the process. So to do that in a way, I think that this spiritual intimacy with grace, this identity with grace, in which we are both in love with the beloved and identical to the beloved and contemplating the beloved, and something in integral theory we call the three faces of God: first person, second person, and third person. In third person, I contemplate God as the object of my attention through philosophy or through nature mysticism. I look upon the body of God as nature. I look upon the patterns of divine existence when I do philosophy. In second person spirituality, I turn to face the beloved as you who are before me, you, mystery of existence, as I was speaking earlier. I turn to face and, in that sense, pray. I open my heart in intimate connection with the beloved, the mystery of existence, as my most intimate other. And in first-person spirituality, I awaken as the I am-ness that is the mystery of existence. I am that. We am that. And there is a collective intelligence, a way that when we do this together, when we stand in this and feel this, when we sing, when we laugh, when we inquire together, when we engage these questions sincerely and deeply, the collective field becomes something. We am that. It's not just the I am-ness, there's a we am-ness, that we together are not separate. I use the singular of the verb, we am, because in some sense we are one. The prior unity, the unity out of which all this is made, that which said yes, that was the impulse that became the Big Bang, is being itself as us. We am that. And the feeling of that and the communion of that is part of what I hope we are invoking here and feeling nurtured by, and that we are hopefully going to learn to practice together with. I hope to bring more of that to those who are interested, even as I extend this discussion series in the new year. And I have a lot of questions I'd like to take further. I'm going to be having some interesting dialogues with Raphael Kushner. Will be the first one in January. There are other dialogues scheduled with, let's see, Lynn Twist, who's a wonderful activist. She wrote the book The Soul of Money. Andrew Harvey, who's a spiritual activist, very strong spiritual activist in his own right. Michael Dowd, the evolutionary evangelist, will be a guest on this series. So there are quite a few people who'll be joining us over the months to come, as I think we'll deepen and extend this. I promise to stay sincerely engaged with this in a way that keeps asking fresh questions instead of simply repeating myself. I hope I've kept the thematic unity, but still that you've felt the living quality of this inquiry. Okay, well, we're just about at the end of our time. I think I'm going to make the last announcement so that we can finish up. Thank you so much for joining us. I'll open up the lines here to say goodbye in just a minute. I want to say that as the host of the series and the founder of Integral Spiritual Practice and the author of Integral Life Practice with Ken and Marco and Adam, I have this inspiring challenge to further integrate all these powerful truths and embody them in ways that can be learned and sustained, you know, over a lifetime. I've always had a heart-centered approach, and that approach, which I kind of embody in Integral Spiritual Practice, is really how I'm bringing that together. And I've had a lot of comments and emails asking me about it, and more of you have posted questions about how we can all evolve whatever practices we currently embrace and how we can embody their benefits, you know, in deeper and more sustainable ways. So the good news that I have to say, it is my life's experience and my testimony that you can. You do not have to be that extraordinary being, the one in a generation who stands brilliantly bright, who's like the ficus in the botanical garden, the ficus among all ficuses. You know, there's every type of human being. Some of us are not as uniquely blessed by every ease. Some of us hurt in various ways, and it's okay to be you in whatever way you are. You can cut through the tendency to feel ashamed of the ways in which you are not the icons of beauty and grace that we hold before ourselves and some of our celebrities. You can cut through that whole Gordian knot to the simplicity on the other side of complexity through your practice, and we can do that in a different way together, I think. I think there's a new kind of citizenship in which our spirituality is not an escape but an empowerment of our effectiveness and our engagement in life as human beings. So for those of you who are interested to learn more and go deeper, there's something I have been working on that I will be sharing with you soon, and I'll let you know about it when it's ready. For the rest of you, I'm so excited that Beyond Awakening will be continuing probably twice a month, mostly, not perfectly, and probably mostly at 10 a.m. on Sundays Pacific time. So you're invited to visit our blog at beyondawakeningseries.com/blog. And our Facebook group at beyondawakeningseries.com/Facebook. And certainly, if you're not already registered for the series, please do so. And if there's someone you'd like to invite, please invite them at the main gateway, beyondawakeningseries.com itself. If you're interested to know a little more about me and my work, please visit integralspiritualpractice.com. And then after this call, we'll take a break over the holidays and we'll return on Sunday morning, January 10th at 10 a.m. Sunday morning, and I'm very excited about this dialogue. Raphael Kushner is a fresh, deep, brilliant voice. I think we'll have a truly adventuresome conversation on the central role of emotional connection in the evolution of our spirituality. So thanks so much for joining me. Let's open up the phone lines and wish you a happy holidays, and thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful holiday. Bye-bye.